children are entitled to a relationship with both of their parents, and they're entitled to know who they are.
Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse of the Ruth Institute talking about her presentation at the 2017 Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
And if you take that entitlement as basic and reason backwards from that, what you'll end up with is the whole traditional Christian sexual morality. Get married, stay married, and only have sex with the person you're married to.
You can meet and hear Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse making the case against the sexual revolution at the Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 10th and Saturday, November 11th in Houston, Texas. Registration is $120 and includes 3 meals. Childcare is free. For more information, look for the Making the Case logo at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 10th and 11th in Houston.
The Bible tells us that to minister to the needs of God's creation is an act of worship. To ignore those needs is to dishonor the God who made us. And that is just what we're doing by walking away from this accord.
The American left liked Russia a whole lot more when it was Marxist and communist than the American left likes Russia now.
The fundamental problem for every society is the unattached male.
The fact of the virginal conception, the fact that she is the Theotokos, the mother of God and so forth. We rejoice in those things because they tell us something special, not about Mary, but instead they tell us something special about Jesus, about who he is.
Missouri dairy farmers love Issues Etc.
Is it good news analysis, much less journalism, to start talking about causes in making assertions about causes like what motivated the man yesterday to shoot those congressional members and staffers who were practicing baseball in Alexandria, Virginia? There's some things that we know, but it has been just a little more than 24 hours, and there's certainly more to learn. Is it good news analysis to start connecting the dots on him, much less on other things, broader causes, like we find in a New York Times editorial that basically blames Republicans in general for the shooting yesterday? It seems as though the Republicans are to blame whether or not Republicans get shot or Democrats get shot. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live on this Thursday afternoon, the 15th of June. We're going to be talking with Molly Hemingway of Fox News about that New York Times editorial. Then we'll be going through listener email and the Issues Etc. comment line. Before we bring on Molly, there's a great book that would make a fantastic Father's Day present, whether you have a father who's still alive, or you have a son, or a husband, or a grandson who is a father. It's called Man Up, The Quest for Masculinity by Issues Etc. regular guest Pastor Jeff Hemmer. It's not your typical Christian masculinity book. It isn't about barbecues and drum circles and fast cars and sports. It's about Jesus. You can find out more about it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand, and you'll find Man Up by Pastor Jeff Hemmer. You can also call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Joining us to talk about the New York Times editorial that blames Republicans for Wednesday's shooting in Alexandria, Virginia, Molly Hemingway, a Fox News contributor, senior editor of The Federalist and author of the book Trump versus the Media, and a recent column titled, To the New York Times, Bipartisanship Means Blaming GOP When Both Democrats and Republicans Are Shot. Molly, welcome back to Issues Etc.
It's great to be here with you.
Just in terms of journalism, or maybe in terms of news analysis, is it good practice to start drawing conclusions about causes when we don't even have all the facts of what happened just a little over 24 hours ago?
Yeah, not at all. It is true that we do have some information from which you can draw some inferences or that speak to this shooter's motivation or whatnot. There is information out there, and it's okay to mention that information and share it with people. What's problematic is too often the media jump to conclusions when there isn't information there. So in this case, this shooting that we had this week, we have a guy with an extremely lengthy social media record and written record in newspaper reports of opposition to Republicans, as sometimes quite heated, opposition to Republicans, a political track record, and then the crime itself was very specific. Targeting of Republican politicians while they were practicing baseball on a baseball field. You have the information that the guy left his state to come to another state recently, you know, presumably that's related to the crime that happened. What I think is interesting is to compare it to what I wrote about in this piece is the Jared Loughner shooting at the Gabrielle Giffords rally. And in that instance, before anybody had any information, many people in the media had already convicted Republicans for that crime because Gabrielle Giffords was a Democrat and because people had targeted her politically for, you know, how Republicans target certain races if they want to win or whatnot. And that narrative got going, even though it turned out that the man who killed these six people and shot these 18 other people in the Gabby Giffords shooting was severely mentally unstable, was obsessed with Gabby Giffords, and believed that the government was controlling people through the use of grammar. And this is not something that you can pin on Republicans, and there was never any evidence to pin it on Republicans, and yet that was the media narrative. That's a little different than what we're talking about with this situation where a progressive Democratic activist targeted Republican congressmen for assassination.
So how would you summarize the New York Times editorial that you're reacting to in your latest piece?
So what is so shocking about the New York Times editorial that was published in 2017 is that even though it was never true that Republicans were to blame for the Jared Loughner shooting of the Gabby Giffords rally, it was never true. There was never evidence to support it. In the intervening 6 years, we've had nothing but evidence to dispute that. We actually have his records. We have his papers and whatnot. And yet today, the New York Times ran this editorial blaming Sarah Palin for that shooting when they know that is not true. They know that's an utter falsehood. And yet they were doing it not in the heat of the moment when people were angry that a Democratic congresswoman had been shot, you know, where you can understand that a Democratic paper like the New York Times would be emotional and upset, although that's no excuse for what they did. But 6 years later, they are lying with malice, willfully, about whether she had anything to do with that shooting. And I find that disgusting. I mean, I've been a strong critic of New York Times when it's needed, when they mess up stories or when they don't do a good job covering issues. This is beyond the pale. I mean, this is Stalinesque rewriting of history to serve a political agenda. What they said in this editorial was that while the shooting of these Republican congressmen by an anti-Republican activist has no clear political linkage, the shooting of Gabby Giffords by Jared Loughner was clearly incited by Sarah Palin. I mean, that's utter, utter falsehood.
On two counts. I mean, of what we know so far, a very politically active individual here in Illinois travels to Washington, D.C. and targets Republicans while they're practicing baseball, literally targets them. I think it's fair to at least say he thought he was politically motivated. Who would disagree with him?
Right. I mean, I think at this point, there's no doubt that it was politically motivated. What we don't know is if there's something else that needs to be part of our understanding of what happened. You know, there is no track record at this point of mental illness or whatnot. But, you know, does that play a role? Is there family? Or, you know, but there might be other information that adds to the story. But there's no question that a man who spent many years focusing his anger and rage at Republican congressmen and Republicans in general, who joined groups calling for the termination of Republicans, whose rhetoric was, you know, it wasn't totally outside what you're hearing these days, but it was clearly anti-Republican rhetoric. There's no question that this is not a coincidence. You know, this wasn't a man who accidentally shot some people while he happened to be walking and, you know, his gun misfired. This is pretty obvious. In the Loughner case, yes, there's also a track record there. There's a track record that he was obsessed with Gabby Giffords. He felt she didn't answer his questions about the government controlling people through grammar properly, and he was angry about that. Now, that doesn't sound like normal political discourse because it's not, because this man was severely mentally unstable. Other people report to that. He was kicked out of school for being mentally unstable. He was treated for his mental instability. He twice wasn't even able to stand trial because he was ruled mentally incompetent before he, you know, before he was able to finally face justice for what he did. So there are all sorts of corroborating reasons to understand that these two situations are different. To flip it and claim exactly the opposite, which is what the New York Times is doing, is just reprehensible. It's shocking.
Okay, so what I'm wondering here is, everybody knows that the New York Times has an axe to grind here, several axes that they want to grind, and they'll grind them in due time, as they always do. But look, just getting facts right, they are the paper of record. They are the one who claim, this is the paper that claims the highest journalistic standards. Just to get the facts right, what's at work in the New York Times that people at the news desk don't say, people at the editorial desk, you know, your editorial, I like its conclusions, but the facts are incorrect.
Well, I mean, it is true that, you know, there's a difference between their news pages and their editorial pages. At the same time, one of their top political reporters, Glenn Thrush, was today tweeting about his own confusion about the difference between facts and opinions, which does not really give people confidence about the paper of record. Glenn Thrush was exposed through the WikiLeaks as someone who gave his copy, his newspaper copy, over to Democratic activists for review before he published it. So that's already a mark against him. And today on Twitter, he's saying that he said that all discussions of political civility must begin with Donald Trump because he's the person who made political discourse bad. Now, there is no question that Donald Trump is corrosive in his political rhetoric, that he has been insulting and rude to people who he feels have attacked him, and that is something that the country witnessed firsthand throughout the primary and general election. The idea that we didn't have political incivility before Donald Trump is so historically ignorant it boggles the mind. And yet Glenn Thrush, when he offered this opinion of his, said, and that's a fact, not an opinion. No, Glenn, that is literally textbook definition of opinion. And also, it's falsifiable opinion, by which I mean it's not even true in that we have millennia of history of political incivility. And even in the short term, we have people saying that Republicans are like Hezbollah. We have Joe Biden saying that Republicans want to put people back in chains. You had Obama saying that Mitt Romney was literally trying to kill people. I mean, this is not, Donald Trump did not begin our practice of being uncivil toward each other. He continued and exploited and manipulated it, sure, and that's not to his credit, but the idea that he began it is not true. It's not fact, and it's not even a good opinion.
How much has relativistic postmodern culture, with its kind of plastic, fluid view of truth, influenced journalism today?
Well, that's why when I wrote about this, I got some feedback from people who were saying just that, that they wonder if people's understanding of truth as malleable or based in feelings contributes to people's confusion. They want it to be true that Sarah Palin was responsible for Jared Loughner killing 6 people and injuring 18 others. So even though it's not true, that feeling and that desire and the fact that what do we really know, or the way that they say that we don't really know what truth is, helps contribute to a climate where you can print utter falsehoods and get away with it. And that is not a good sign for our republic, because you actually are seeing this not just in the New York Times, but all over the place, where people are not caring so much about words having meaning that you can count on. You know, that is a problem that you're seeing across the aisles.
There's also a weird response I want your thoughts on. And just perusing my Twitter feed this morning, I saw some, I don't know, kind of odd references by, I'm going to say, for lack of a better term, the Hillary Clinton camp of journalists, trying to make her the victim in yesterday's shooting, that she's really the victim because she's people have been attacking her with words, and this is just of one cloth. Bullets and words go together, essentially, is what they're saying.
Yeah, the context there is that people are extremely angry at supporters of Bernie Sanders. They blame him for Hillary's loss. And so people who still haven't come to terms with Hillary Clinton's deficiencies as a candidate sort of follow her lead in blaming everyone but the candidate or the campaign for the failures of the candidate and the campaign. And Bernie bros, as they derisively call the largely male supporters of Bernie Sanders, get come in for special anger from these people. And actually, the news pages of the New York Times tried to pin the attack on these Republican congressmen as emblematic of the larger anger they say that these Bernie brothers have. I did see people saying, oh, this is very much like what Hillary Clinton had to deal with from the Bernie bros. I mean, this is very different. Yes, people who supported Bernie Sanders strongly disliked Hillary Clinton. That is true. That does not mean that they were encouraging violence or that they were themselves being violent. People need to learn to understand the difference between strong political opposition and violence and make sure that the two don't cross.
Isn't that really what one of the things that the New York Times could be focusing on? The difference between civil and sometimes uncivil political opposition and violence?
Certainly, they should be covering the fact that there has been an increase in political violence, whether that's riots in the street, attacking of Trump supporters. We've seen multiple physical attacks. We've seen parades being canceled because they can't guarantee the safety of Republicans marching the parade. That's a real thing that's happening. We are seeing an increase in political violence that, even if the media aren't doing a good job covering it, people who are Republican definitely sense and are worried about and fear. But by the New York Times' own standards, they should be calling the entire left to account and the media establishment for promulgating this climate of fear and hatred and illegitimacy of a president. You read newspaper. I'm not saying that I blame these people, but they themselves claim, that this is the standard. So they should be held to that standard. If they believe that criticizing President Obama means you're justifying violence against him, well, what do you do with what the media have been doing with regard to Donald Trump and his voters? They're not just criticizing. They're delegitimizing an entire election. They're saying that he is abnormal, that he must be stopped, that you can use constitutional and unconstitutional aims or manipulate these aims in order to get him out of office. And that's some pretty strong rhetoric. And I'm not seeing a lot of introspection or self-searching about any role that the media have in contributing to this climate. It is important that people understand that rhetoric is important, even as they understand that people have to be held responsible for their own actions. So the man who shot these congressmen is responsible for his own actions. It's also true that words are important, and we should be careful and think about how we speak to each other, how we understand political disagreement, and how we really seek to understand and put the best construction on what other people are saying, why they're saying it, why they have different political aims. And that's not something that our media are doing a good job of at all.
Molly, we constantly hear pleas from the left about the need for more and more diversity. Couldn't the New York Times editorial board use a little ideological diversity? How out of touch are they with average middle-class Americans, as evidenced by this editorial?
Well, at this point, what really need is a fact checker or someone who has a basic understanding of reality. That would do, because that's how far afield they are right now. But obviously, they have problems with understanding what's going on in the country that they claim to serve. They knew that the moment Donald Trump was elected and they had the option to reform and refine what they were doing, that they could have made different hiring and promotion decisions, that they could have actually tried to understand people whose views they've been disparaging for such a long time. They could have tried to focus on facts instead of pushing narratives. They could have dropped the agenda journalism and just focused on facts as well. And they've chosen not to do any of that. They've actually chosen to get worse. And that is dangerous for the Republic. It's dangerous for the country. It's very discrediting, not just of the New York Times, but every media corporation that is refusing to adapt to understand the people they claim to serve. It's not good.
Molly Hemingway is a Fox News contributor, senior editor of The Federalist, author of the new book, Trump versus the Media, and a recent column titled, "To New York Times, Bipartisanship Means Blaming GOP When Both Democrats and Republicans Are Shot." You can read this column and purchase Trump versus the Media at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. And you can follow Molly on Twitter @MZHemingway. Molly, thank you.
Thank you.
Molly Hemingway and her husband Mark will be speaking at the 2017 Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Houston, Texas. They're going to be making the case for religious liberty and making the case for Christians engaging the news media. Registration for the conference is $120 and includes three meals. Childcare is free. You can find out more and register at issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 10th and Saturday, November 11th in Houston, Texas. When we come back, we'll be going through your email and your comments on the Issues Etc. comment line. Stay tuned.
LCMS Rural and Small Town Mission exists to support and encourage congregations in rural and small town settings. In partnership with LCMS districts, RSTM is uniquely positioned to make a major impact in revitalization support, community engagement and outreach training, congregational partnership development, and worker support through providing and developing resources geared specifically to rural and small town congregations. Check us out at lcms.org/RSTM or give us a call at our office. We're here to help.
We would like to overlook the difficulty of daily repentance and death to our sins in the interest of progressing to a more advanced spirituality.
Rebecca Curtis from her new audiobook, Ladylike, Living Biblically.
Somehow, spiritual advancement always amounts to our getting to spend more time on the things we like and calling it stewardship or service.
You can purchase and download an audio version of Ladylike, Living Biblically at Amazon, Audible, and iTunes. Ladylike, Living Biblically by Rebecca Curtis and Rose Adel.
Theology for Blue Collar, White Collar, and Clerical Collar. You're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Pastor Clint Poppy, Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Lincoln, Nebraska, proud supporter of Issues Etc. Each month we host the Nebraska Lutherans for Confessional Study, a serious study of Lutheran theology. We generally meet on the fourth Thursday of each month from 9:30 to 2:30, and both clergy and laity are invited. There is no charge to attend. For more information, please call the church office or visit our website, goodshepherdlincoln.org, and click on the green NLCS tab.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran Learning. Issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.